And joining us on the book club on Perspectives today is New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens. Delia is the co-author of three internationally bestselling nonfiction books about her life as a wildlife scientist in Africa. She has won the John Burroughs Award for Nature Writing and has been published in Nature, The African Journey of Ecology, and International Wildlife, among others. She currently lives in Idaho, where The Caudad Sing is her first novel. Delia, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Louis. I really appreciate it.
Now, as I was mentioning, before the interview started, I want to talk a little bit about your background. And as I mentioned during that intro, this is your first novel, but you're not a first-time writer. You've written some other things with a degree in zoology. You have been around the block and even more times than just once. Tell us, first of all, have you always been interested in writing?
Yes, I have. I really have. I think it started when I co-authored those three nonfiction books. I did wildlife research with my former husband in the Kalahari Desert of Botswana, starting back in 1974. And we had such an incredible story. So many different things happened. We were doing serious research, but we also had a lot of adventures. And I just felt like at that very time is when I felt like I wanted to share my experiences. I wanted to write so that other people could read what we had experienced.
Now, as a little girl, were you always interested in bugs and critters and stuff like that?
I was. I spent my entire life in nature. And when I was a young girl, my mother used to encourage me to go way out in the woods as far as I could go, whether I was on my horse or just exploring with my friends. And she's the one who used to say to me, go way out yonder where the crawdads sing.
Which is what I was going to ask you about, the title, because that's what Tate, one of the characters, tells Kia. Is that how you pronounce her name, Kia?
Kaya.
Okay, when Kaya is told to go out there, and she says, what do you mean? And that's what his mom told him, and that's what your mom told you. So did you already know that's what the title was going to be?
No, I didn't. And that expression meant a lot to me, and it also ties in with the theme of the book, which I won't say too much since you may ask later, but obviously, the book is about how much we can learn about ourselves from nature. And my mother wanted me to go out into nature to see. She wanted me to observe animals. She was savvy that way. She realized how important nature was and how we could learn from it and learn about, when we learn from nature, we learn about ourselves. And so she would say that expression to me, and I used it as my working title, and I thought, no publisher's going to want the title. It's kind of different and crazy, and crawdads aren't warm and fuzzy animals. But actually, we had some discussion about changing it, but then after we edited and everything, my publishers, who have just, we worked so well together, it's all been a wonderful experience, they said, there's no other title for this book but Where the Crawdads Sing.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens. The novel is Where the Crawdads Sing. I guess some of the questions our listeners or your readers might have is, do crawdads really sing?
No, they do not sing. Technically, I mean, that's what the biology books will tell you. But that's another thing that this book is about, is that if you go far enough into the wilderness and if you listen to wildlife, if you listen to what nature is telling us, and you have the courage to go out far all by yourself and experience the wild, then you will hear crawdads sing. And my mother was right. We need to be out there. We need to learn from nature, because that is where our secrets lie.
You talk about nature, and of course in this book, Kaya is very much interested in nature, and we learn a lot from reading this book. But before you started writing this, as I mentioned, you've written other nonfiction books. And in one of those books, you mentioned your experience with lions and elephants. And a lot of people have heard about elephants and the fact that they mourn and stay together as families. But I want you to tell us a little bit about what you learned about lions and elephants.
It was probably the most incredible experience anyone could have. I just can't imagine it was anything, a better life for myself. First of all, in the Kalahari Desert, we studied the the lions, and we learned how they, in fact, could live for 2 years without drinking water. But one of the things that fascinated me most was that we learned that in those mammals that form tightly bonded groups, like the pride of lions or the herd of elephants, those groups are made up only of females. They're not males and females, only females. And also in baboons, in all primates except two, the troops are made up of females. So we have a very, as humans, we have a very strong genetic propensity to belong in these strong groups of females. And that's one thing I experienced was isolation. I lived for years in very isolated situations. I had no opportunity to have a strong female group. And then when I came back to this country, I realized that the friends living here, even if they were in a city with a million people, they also felt isolated. We don't have that strong sense of community anymore. We don't often have groups of females that support each other with the child raising and everything. So that's what this book is about, really. It's about isolation and how to deal with it and how... because I saw animals, wild animals, isolated, and I could see how isolation affects a person.
So we're talking about, we're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens, and the name of her novel is Where the Crawdads Sing. To talk a little bit about the book for our listeners, readers, the story opens up with the Marsh Girl. We don't find out that she used to call the Marsh Girl till later on, but this is Kaya Clark. And she's been brought up in this marsh area in North Carolina, and she's 10 years old, but her family has abandoned her, her mother and her siblings, and it's just her father, and the father is not there for the best of situations. She gets drunk, leaves her alone, so she's pretty much out on her own. And I guess that sets up the story as far as what you were talking about, being isolated?
Yes, that's correct. She is the heroine of the story, and she turns into this beautiful character. She grew as I wrote her. She almost wrote herself. And she teaches us that we can do so much more than we think we can. At first, she's on her own, but she knows how to fish, and she has a shack that she's living in. I wanted the story to be very believable and realistic. I didn't want it to be fanciful. She had the ability to survive there, and she did start befriending a few people, like this old wharf keeper who helped her. But she became this spunky, witty character. She tackled these obstacles, but also what is important is she did eventually reach the stage that she just wanted to be with other people very badly when she was an adolescent, so she started reaching out. And, of course, the village nearby had discriminated against her for years. They started calling her the Marsh Girl. She was different. We discriminate against people who are different. They ignored her. They never helped her. So she experienced rejection. But she finally is drawn into this tender love story from one of the young men from the village. And it all looks like her life is going to be a bit better until the unthinkable happens. And then there is a murder mystery.
So this book, Delia, is not just a murder mystery. It's a murder mystery. It's a coming-of-age story. It's a legal thriller. It's a love story. And you can go on and on. And you take us in very different directions. And tell us a little bit about why you chose to go from character to character and in between years like 1970, 1960, 1969, etc.
I did the time shifts because the story starts with Kaya's story being abandoned in the marsh, but I didn't want, and she stays on her own for many years, but I didn't want the story just to go on with that because I was afraid the reader, I'm always have the reader in mind, I was afraid the reader would get a little bit tired of reading about a young girl in the marsh. So what I did as a means of foreshadowing, I started bringing in the murder mystery, the investigation of the murder, I started bringing that into chapters early. So I would bounce back and forth between the two time periods. So it lets the reader, it's the bomb under the sofa, if you will. because, you know, you're reading about this little girl, but then you see, oh, my, there's going to be a murder, and surely this little girl doesn't have anything to do with that. And the two stories intertwine and are woven together in such a way that you one supports the other.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens. Her novel is Where the Crawdads Sing. Delia, you mentioned the fact that Kaya is discriminated against by the townspeople, and she befriends Jumpin' and his wife, Mabel. And you talked earlier about isolation and females, and Mabel tells Kaya at one point how important it is to have girlfriends.
Yes, she does. And Mabel was very important to Kaya because she didn't have very many females in her life. But that is something that we all need to remember, is that we do have a strong genetic propensity to belong in female groups. And when we don't, we don't have the support that we need. And we do feel isolated. And Mabel told her that. And some of the most vivid scenes, I think, of the book are when Kaya would hide behind an oak tree on the edge of a beach and watch the young people from the village walk along the beach. And she would watch the girls, you know, the girls would squat in a circle and laugh at a sand crab, or they would run into the waves holding hands. The young girls from the village had a group, and Kaya didn't. So she always watched these from a distance, and it made her feel more lonely.
And we read about discrimination, and it's in its worst form. We hear about Colored Town. We hear about even little kids saying the N-word. And then she is also identified as not just the Marsh Girl, but white trash.
Yes. Yes. Discrimination takes all kinds of faces. And it's the book is about rejection and discrimination. And there are a lot of behavior patterns that we exhibit that are not right in our society. We do discriminate. We do become aggressive. We do sometimes abandon children. And we can understand better why we do these things if we go back to nature and see why it happens naturally. Some of the worst behaviors that we exhibit are behaviors that at one time or another were important for survival. That's the reason we have some of these genes. And it doesn't mean that it's right to behave that way, but it helps us understand. And if we understand better where these behaviors came from, maybe we can behave better.
As you mentioned that, it reminds me of one part in the book where Kaya is watching a bird, a female, and the female is coding to attract a mate. She attracts a mate, and then she changes her code, and all of a sudden she has lunch.
Yes, that's actually the insects. That's what fireflies, lightning bugs, whichever one you want to call them, that's what they do. They call in their, they have signals. You know, you see fireflies flying around with their little lights, and it looks so beautiful. And I grew up with fireflies and just loved them. But little did we know that they, you know, the female makes a certain signal, calls the male in, and then after she mates with her species, and she changes her signal so that she draws in a male of a different species, and then she pretends like she's going to mate, and she turns around and eats him for lunch, so, or dinner more, since at night. But yes, and so another lesson from nature.
Kaya is discriminated against when she does go to school for one day. She's excited about being there, and especially with the smell of yeast rolls and chicken pot pie. But she has a terrible experience, so she doesn't return. However, when this young man, Tate, comes into her life, he teaches her how to read and write, and suddenly this opens up a whole new world for her, and especially when she reads the family Bible.
Yes, because she learns about her parents and the dates that her siblings were born, and even learns her own birthday when she reads the family page in the Bible. And yes, this was another thing that surprised me about Kaya. As I said, it was almost like she wrote herself, because when she learned to read, she became very, very knowledgeable. She started reading about the natural history and learning about her environment. And we don't want to give away too much, but she became very clever and accomplished.
We talk about the fact that some people have called this a coming of age story. And we read about this in the way you write and how Kaya doesn't have a mom or a big sister to tell her about what's happening with her body and changing. So when it's time for menstruation to come along, she is scared, obviously.
Oh, I know. Oh, there she is. Another reason you need a female group. She is totally isolated when she has her first period, and there she is. She doesn't know what's happening. It's her, the young man who she's starting to see, a real sweet scene between him trying to explain it to him and taking care of her. And there they are, just two teenagers trying to figure this out. And it's just another lesson in life that we do need other people and how important relationships can be.
And again, this character that you built in there, Mabel, comes to the rescue and helps her out.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does. I don't know, in life it just seems like no matter how bad things get, you can usually find someone to come along and help you out.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens. Her book is Where the Crawdads Sing. And as we mentioned, it's a coming-of-age story. It's a mystery. It's a legal thriller. It's a love story. All of the above. And it starts out with Kaya Clark, who is 10 years old. She's been abandoned by her mom and siblings. The father is still there, but not really there. In fact, things are better when the father is gone. And then as she grows and continues to learn, Delia, we find that this young lady who has not been to school except for one day, all of a sudden she becomes a naturalist and an expert in that through her reading, through her knowledge, and the fact that we know we have grandparents, we have uncles, aunts who weren't schooled, didn't have the education we did, yet in some time they're a lot smarter than we are.
Exactly. I mean, it's very, very important to learn what we do in school and in university if we're lucky enough to go, and from books. But also, one of the big points of this book is there's so much we need to learn from being outside, being with nature, and being with other people. That's an entirely different education that a lot of us miss, and it's, to me, just as important because we... It tells us, nature tells us so much, and we need to listen.
I found myself, when I was reading this, rooting for the young man, Tate, and kind of not rooting for the other young man, Chase, and wanting, as a father, wanting to protect Kaya.
Yes. It's sort of a love triangle, not really. I don't know how you'd describe it. There are two young men who are vying for Kaya's attention. And I wrote Tate as sort of a representative of the evolved male, in quotes. Tate loved poetry. He read a lot. He's the one who taught her to read. He learned from his father to love opera. And Chase, on the other hand, sort of represents the unevolved male, and he is sort of like the more of the buck and rut, the man who's just trying to go and be with as many different women as he can. And not that we have men that are either one or the other, but that's just was symbolic of those different behavior patterns that you find in nature. And she was attracted to both, which is interesting. I mean, she would be. And then, of course, the story unfolds, and we find out how that plays out. But the two males were very different.
We're visiting with Delia Owens, New York Times bestselling author. The name of her book is Where the Crawdads Sing. You mentioned Tate a little bit and what he learned from his father. And I like it's towards the end of the book where Tate describes his father and what he learned from him. And if you would mind sharing with us, what Tate's father said about a man.
Yes. The fact that it was a real man is someone who appreciates and likes to read poetry and loves opera, is not afraid to cry, a man who can be sensitive, but also do what he needs to be done to defend himself or a woman or a child. So, you know, it takes all of that. And that was, I think, an important lesson that Tate's father passed on to him.
And it's interesting, the different poems that you share with us in this book, because, as you mentioned, Kaya is suddenly opened up a new world with her being able to read and being able to write. And when Tate explains to her that sometimes words can be used to write things like poetry, she gets very interested in that. And you share with us some incredible poems.
Thank you. Yes, we can't say too much here because the poems are important in the plot.
Exactly.
but yes, I love the poetry in the book. It was fun. It was actually a lot of fun, that part of it. And it's important, but it was also sort of a fun thing for the writer to be able to do, to add that. And that was another thing I had fun with, is the mysteries to the clue. I'm sorry, the clues to the mystery are hidden in this story in a lot of different places. The clues are hidden in the backdrop, in the nature, and within some of the animals and the natural history, and all sorts of strange places. But if you go back and read the book a second time, you can see I've left quite a trail of clues.
And we talk about Kaya being rejected by the townspeople, people in general around her, but especially her family. And at the end of the book, like many authors, you acknowledge and thank people for this, and you thank your twin brother, and more importantly, also a lot of your family members, because they were there for you.
Yes, they were. I was very, very lucky. I am still very, very lucky. I lived a lot of my life in isolated situations far away, but I have always had the support of my family and my close friends. My twin brother has helped us a lot in Africa. He sent things, shipped things to us. He took care of things here and in this country for us. And my friends have always been there. I have the best friends of my life I've had since kindergarten. In fact, my book is dedicated to three of my best friends that I've had since kindergarten.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens. Delia has written Where the Crawdads Sing. I mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you have published some other works. Of course, those are nonfiction. Tell us a little bit about making the switch from nonfiction to fiction. How was that?
It's interesting because some people seem to think that might be difficult. I don't know. I found it very easy. I just loved going from nonfiction to fiction because in nonfiction, you know, everything is factual, so you have to be accurate and you have to remember exactly when something happened, get the dates right and tie them in with the other dates, and the characters have to be real people, so they have to be portrayed correctly. And with fiction, you can just, to me, it's like taking off and getting on your horse and riding from inside of the corral, which would be nonfiction, and just taking off across the meadow and up into the mountains, because you can go wherever you want to go with fiction. You know, the sky is literally the limit, and I loved that, and I loved experimenting. I would take a character a certain place, I would go on a certain adventure here or there, and if it didn't work, you just delete it. And I found that it stimulated my imagination to have that freedom.
Tell me a little bit about your research, because, well, you are a zoologist, a naturalist, so you knew a lot about birds and migration and insects and all that you told us about in the book. But you also, involved social services, the legal system, life in general out in North Carolina in the 1960s. So there were a lot of things there that you had to address the correct way, and you did.
Yes, thank you. I received my bachelor degree in zoology from the University of Georgia, and I got my PhD from the University of California in at Davis in animal behavior. And I spent my adult life conducting scientific studies of large mammals in Africa, and then came back and did some work with wolves and grizzly bears in North America. But always when I was conducting the studies of the larger mammals, I always did pay attention to the insects and the birds, because they were all around me. I lived in camps in Africa where, at one stage, my coworker and I were the only two people in an area the size of Ireland. And we were the only people there. There were no roads. There were no shops. There was nothing. This was in the central Kalahari Desert. We drove our Land Rover in there. And so the only friends we had were the lizards that would come in the camp and the birds. And they were we were always surrounded with these creatures. And so part of our life, we would go out, of course, and follow the lions. We radio collared them. We studied them. But just sitting having breakfast around the campfire, you'd have, you know, birds all around you. So we were always observing these animals, and they're just a part of my life, and I've made them part of this story.
I would imagine that you have some great pictures.
Well, a lot of the great pictures were on the old cameras and the film. I wish we'd had an iPhone. That would have been a lot easier, but yes, we had to try to keep the film cool. You know how that was, living in the Kalahari Desert. It'd be 120 degrees, and we were trying to keep the film cool, and we didn't have a refrigerator, of course. We had to bury everything in the sand to keep it cool.
Well, if you ever decide to become a professor or go teach somewhere, I would love to be in your class, because as a creative writer, scientist, all of the above, I can imagine you could keep all the students at bay.
No. Oh, thank you very much for saying that. I don't know about that, but I really appreciate you saying it. It would be fun.
I don't think
I'm going to have a third life. I've had one life as a research scientist and another as a, thank goodness I've had this opportunity to write a novel. I'd love to teach, but I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to have a third life.
Well, Delia, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. And if you wouldn't mind letting our listeners know if you have a Facebook page or a web page that they can go to?
Yes, my website is DeliaOwens.com. And if you go to that site, then you can find my Facebook and my Instagram addresses.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
I really appreciate you having me on, Louie. It's been fun.
Thank you. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Delia Owens. Her novel is Where the Crawdads Sing.